We will talk to a teacher that feels morally obligated to refuse to administer standardized tests. Our activist of the week is fighting for equality in college classrooms. Plus, our weekly tribute to Howard Zinn, trending education news, and more. Let's bust some pencils.
This is Busted Pencils Radio, fully leaded education talk with Dr. Tim Slecker, Dean of Education at Edgewood College, and Dr. Jed Hopkins, Associate Professor of Education at Edgewood College.
Here's what's trending in education news.
Number one.
Is teaching Mark Twain pornography? Hey, in Kansas, it very well could be. There is now a new law that allows the legislature to define what is considered pornographic material. Things such as Mark Twain, Toni Morrison, classic novels, these can be now considered pornographic.
I mean, you're serious about this.
Yeah, we're serious. In fact, if you go to bustle.com, you can get the story where it lays out the law where legislators have decided that they're going to define what is, quote, pornographic material.
Very worrying. I mean, clearly, protecting children from pornography is a good thing. But who is to say what counts as pornography? And if seriously that these are the examples of what counts as pornography, this is pretty problematic.
Well, specifically, though, Toni Morrison, you know, as a Nobel Prize-winning author in America. Yeah. I mean, students have read her.
It's ridiculous.
Have read her stuff. That's the word being used by one of the Kansas legislators, is Toni Morrison is pornographic. I'm getting a little bit nervous if I'm a teacher now down there making a decision about a book to teach my students.
Yeah, of course you are. And, you know, if you think about it, education is all about contextualizing text, isn't it? It's putting those texts into context. It's all about context. And a good curriculum is a curriculum which gets kids to look at things in new ways and deeper ways and complex ways and critical ways and so on. It's not just about the content. It's also about the context.
Number two.
How much does it cost to take the Common Core Aligned Park Test? Well, in New Jersey, Jed, according to sources that we have out of there, whether it be Bob Braun's Ledger, the minimum get-in price, your base model park test is $108 million.
Wow.
$108 million. As they say, get your millions back, New Jersey.
Do we not have a resource crisis in public education?
Well, we keep hearing about it. We keep saying there is not enough money for field trips. There is not enough money for school football. There's not enough money for chorus.
So let's spend it on something worthwhile, like more standardized testing.
It's $108 million just to start, with 68 different variables that could up your price beyond that. What could a teacher do with that money? What could a school district do with that money? Instead of constantly telling the public there's no money for public education, the teachers are overpaid, that we spend way too much money instructing students. The issue here is that are we really spending enough money to instruct students when we're paying $108 million for the state of New Jersey just to administer the park test?
Number three.
First time ever in American history, we have over 50% of school children in American public schools on free or reduced lunches.
Wow.
50% of students. How can you be hungry for learning when you're hungry? You know, we think of public schools as equally funded, equal opportunity places, when the reality is that there are, in places of poverty, those schools themselves reflect that same poverty. Yeah. And so those kids that attend those schools in those areas are coming to school hungry, are coming to school sick, right, are coming to school without access to books. Finally, we have the data for people who say, you know, well, it's not that bad. Look, it really is. It's that bad. We have 25% across the country, children living in poverty. We have concentrated across the whole public school system, 50% of students who are hungry in some way, shape, or form. And here's what I hear when you and I talk about news like this. Well, you're making excuses for poverty. What would Matt Damon's mom say if somebody said poverty was just an excuse?
Wait, what? You want to know what my mom would say? All right, well, just ask her.
That line is cruel and twisted. There is no way a young child from a poor family is going to
have the same level of comfort and security required to be able to learn in school. It's wrong. It's unethical to actually say that all things are equal, that poor kids should be able to learn, just like kids who come to school with healthy bodies and full tummies and secure family situations. It's very wrong to say that, and it's very, very unfair. And that's why I say it's twisted to say it's an excuse, mm-hmm. because then everybody has to go, oh, yeah, those poor kids, they're tough. They can learn. Even if they're hungry, they can learn.
Right.
And it's wrong to say that. I mean, we are the richest country in the world with the highest child poverty rate. It's disgusting. You know, it's something that we have to look at as a nation and recognize that we're having now 24% of our nation's children in poverty circumstances, and we're expecting them to achieve in school by putting pressure on them to learn and to score on tests rather than investing in more economic equity and putting resources in our poorest neighborhoods, improving the safety net for children, and helping their situation before they come to school to improve, so that when they get there, they're on more equal playing field with the kids who come from more prosperous homes.
This is Matt Damon on Busted Pencils Radio. Please stop bothering me and just ask my mom already.
She has taught kindergarten, 4th, 5th, and 6th grades. She was literacy coordinator for Adams School District in Westminster, Colorado, where she mentored teachers and administrators in writing school literacy plans. She is currently the instructional coach at the elementary level and is founder of United Opt Out National. Hey, please welcome to Busted Pencils, Peggy Robertson. Peggy, how are you?
I'm actually really, really good.
That's awesome, because the excitement yeah. behind the idea that a teacher is actually going to go forward here and refuse to – this is different than a parent opt-out, right? This is a teacher saying, no, I'm not going to give the test. First question is, you know, why are you not going to give the PARC? If you're not sure what the PARC is, if you're out there listening, the PARC is one of two sets of tests, high-stakes tests, that will be administered to students using the Common Core curriculum this year. So in Colorado, the PARC is going to be administered, except in Peggy Robertson's classroom. Why, Peggy?
Well, there are lots of reasons, but I think, you know, the big reason is just to think about this test in terms of what you keep saying, the Common Core test. And so what people need to understand is this test, if everyone takes this test, we are really looking at a very quick dismantling of the public schools. That's where this is headed. Because the test is set up, number one, to fail students. They're looking at a 70 to 80% failure rate across the nation, which will, of course, send out that message, again, this manufactured crisis that the public schools are failing. So that's number one reason we have to save the public schools. The second reason is, you know, I'm in the schools every day. In my school, I'm watching these kids get tested nonstop, and none of these tests inform our instruction. And quite honestly, these kids are just so exhausted from testing. I can't comprehend what they're even going through because I'm just watching it. But their ability to withstand day after day this onslaught of testing in some shape or form. And in the elementary schools, I don't know that everyone is really aware of this. In the elementary schools, it never stops. I think in the high schools you hear that, you know, there are spurts of testing. But in the elementary schools, I kid you not, every week it's another test. And this is the big one. So everything is leading up to this test, which ultimately is going to fail these kids. And it's based on standards that they haven't been field tested. They're not research-based. I could go on forever, but, you know, that's the gist of it.
Yeah, Peggy, you know, when I think of a teacher, I think of someone who has to be trusted by the parents. You know, if you're a parent, you want to trust your teacher. You want to trust that the things that are going on in the classroom are really beneficial for your child. Of course you do, you know. So this must be really tricky for teachers who are having to do all of this.
It is tricky because the truth is we're being asked to lie. I mean, that's what this boils down to. If you look at my letter, I say that on a day-in, you know, day-out basis, I'm trying to find the good in this Common Core curriculum. I'm trying to pull out what's good about it because so much of it is absolute crap. And so much it is really teaching to the test. That's mainly the goal here. And they're really getting savvy about how they create this curriculum now to disguise this whole teach to the test system. But that's what it is. And, you know, so for me right now, I feel great because I'm doing the right thing. You know, where I'll land as a result of this, I'm not sure. But I got to do the right thing, and it's just, I can't take it anymore. It's really what it boils down to. It's wrong. It's wrong to do this to kids, and truly, it's abuse. I don't know what else to call it.
Well, it sounds to me like you've taken the Hippocratic Oath for teachers. There isn't one, of course. You know, do no harm. You know, you've asked the people to be the change. You're tired of appealing to those in power. They don't seem to hear you. So you've written this thing. You're taking a stand. So what's the reception been like?
Well, the reception from parents and other teachers is fantastic. Mm. You know, it was on the Washington Post, the answer sheet. So there are comments there. There are comments at the Colorado RAVE website, which is our informal union caucus. So that's where it was first originally posted. But, you know, the next step of this is yesterday, United Opt Out sent out a request to the unions to support teachers that are refusing the test. Because the one thing I thought about when I did this, I thought, wow, imagine how amazing it would be if I could refuse this test and know that I have backup, know that my union is standing behind me 100%. Well, we don't have that right now. None of us have that. And so that's the piece, the missing piece. And I'm still waiting for a response. As of yet, there's no response from NEA or AFT in terms of where they stand on teachers that are risking their careers to do what's right, like you said, to do no harm.
Well, that's it. So, Peg, I was going to go there with that and say, you know, look, I'm putting out here just again for the listener, United Opt Out, you know, put out a press release where essentially you are saying, look, unions, please support teacher refusals to administer tests. You can go to unitedoptout.com and check this out and see the press release right there for anybody that wants to see the specifics of the language. You know, you take Lily Garcia, the new National Education Association president, and use her quotes about, you know, as she has been referring to it, toxic testing and all of the rhetoric around doing away with high-stakes testing. You use the press release to kind of use her language to say, okay, NEA, are you really behind what Lily's saying?
Well, that's exactly what we were thinking.
Okay.
If you read the quote, it says, Lily says this. She says, the revolution I want is proceed until apprehended. Okay, so here I am. I'm proceeding. You know, where does NEA stand on this? Does she really mean what she says? I don't know. I think we're going to find out. But I got to say, it's just fascinating to me that you can stand up and do the right thing, and that you would assume when you do the right thing that immediately the union would be calling you, emailing you, saying, oh, my God, you did the right thing. We have your back. And now we're looking at, you know, over 24 hours later. Again, not saying that they won't respond. They might. But it shocks me that we are met with silence when we do the right thing. Yet, you know, billionaires can do the wrong thing, and boy, they're met with applause in mainstream media every single day.
At this point, you know, no union brass has come forward. The letter, as much as we want the union to get behind this, I look at this and you know, as my job as dean is that I've been showing this to as many teachers as possible to say, look at what one teacher is willing to do. Why are you willing to risk your job, Peggy?
Well, because somebody's got to stand up for these kids. And the other piece is this, like you said, you know, if a teacher is willing to do this, what if every teacher was willing to do this? What if every teacher was willing to take a risk and do what is right for kids? And I wanted to stand up and do that. I wanted to be a model to push that forward. And I'm willing to take that risk. The truth is, I really don't know what's going to happen with my job. I think I'm okay this year, but in May, we'll see if I still have a job. But it's the right thing to do, and every teacher that's able should do it. I get that not everybody can. But I guarantee you there are a lot more out there that could step up and do it if they saw more people like me saying, you know what, I've had enough, I'm going to do what's right for kids. We also have Susan Bowles in Florida who refused the FAIR test. So that's two. Let's hope that we have another one next week and we just keep this moving forward.
Well, Peggy, I want to say thank you, first of all, for writing the letter. And more importantly, though, I want to say thank you for actually carrying out what you're going to do and trying to create the movement here. Listeners, make sure you go to Peg with a Pen, catch her blog. Make sure you check out United Opt Out's website. And Peggy Robertson from Jed and Tim at Busted Pencils, thank you for your time this afternoon.
You're so welcome. Thanks again.
This is Fully Leaded Education Talk. Busted Pencils.
Jed, this is one of my favorite parts of our show because this is when we get to do our activists of the week.
Me too.
Person out there that's truly, as we say, busting pencils.
Absolutely.
Okay? Our activist of the week this week, Dr. Barbara Hong. Dr. Barbara Hong, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you very much for having me on the show.
You were there at a college talking today about the fact that students in college with cognitive disabilities deserve educational equity.
Being equal is having equal opportunities. We're not saying that they're going to get, you know, a 4.0 GPA, you know, and all of this, but providing equal access is what this country is all about, giving equal opportunity. If I wasn't given opportunity in this country, I wouldn't be where I am today. And I appreciate that so much. So just like anybody else, the law of 504, section 504 of the Rehab Act of 1973 said that no otherwise qualified person who is disabled should be denied the opportunity to have equal access to public facility, and in this case, college.
Being in education, we talk a lot about special education in K-12, but Barbara's here now talking about the fact that special education law applies in the college classroom too. How did you get interested in special education for college students?
Well, first of all, it has been, you know, we always talk about K to 12, in fact, from birth to 12, you know, like going to school and all of this. But the thing is that these kids are now moving on and going to college. But the other thing is, are school preparing them for it? Are college faculty prepared to teach these students? In fact, a lot of faculty in college don't even have basic pedagogy on how to present information other than lecturing in front of them. And so we are having just, you know, kids with diverse learning needs. Now, we're talking about qualified individual. We're not talking about accepting anybody in college. Mm-hmm. We want to maintain that standard. However, if somebody is qualified, whether they're in a wheelchair, whether they have, you know, let's say cognitive disability, but they're still capable of learning, with a learning difficulty, there are many things that they can do, faculty can do in college to allow them equal opportunity to learn and then strive for it for their own. So this is a whole new avenue that has not been investigated or studied much. What is their outcome? You know, are we providing them with support that they need? Are we training faculty to help the student be successful? And there are hardly any studies out there other than very broad longitudinal study done by Institution of Education Statistics that says, well, post-secondary education. But we look at two-year, four-year institution. Has anybody ever tracked them? Are they successful? Are they support successful? What can we do differently? We are still learning about that.
Barbara, what kind of response do you get when you go into a college? You bring this to light. What kind of response do you get from the faculty at large?
Well, a lot of faculty claim that we care about these students. Mm. We want to help them. Now, remember, I'm not trying to say that they are not caring. Caring is a perceptual thing. I could say I care. Right. You know, but if the other party doesn't perceive me as caring, that's another different story. So then the other thing is, when you care, what do you do about it? Do you learn about it or just say, oh, I just care? You know, well, I'll be there if the student needs me. So in this case, this presentation that I gave in the college was to help faculty, well, understand where is the student's, you know, where are they coming from? What are their struggles? By understanding where they're coming from, you will prepare your materials differently, not lowering the standard. Remember, you still have to maintain the standard, but it forces you to think differently. This is a diverse classroom now.
Mm-hmm. So a good part of your work is helping the faculty learn how to scaffold in ways that are going to give, as you said before, equal opportunity to all the students.
And if it didn't work out, you know, again, giving them equal opportunity. But I also must, you know, justify with, we are not trying to do a lot, you know, getting kids with cognitive disability in college, and then all they do is for 2 years taking remedial classes, because that's really not college. They could have done that in high school for free of charge, right? So we want to give them a good education by equipping a higher ed institution, the support system, and the faculty with this knowledge.
Right.
Otherwise, they're just taking remedial classes and spending money that they, you know, may not be able to afford to pay back.
Yeah. Are you encouraged in the direction things are going?
Actually, very, very encouraged. Very rare, you know, is that when I give presentation, faculty will say, well, you know, this student shouldn't even be in college. very rare. Now, the other thing is we must bear in mind is when you talk about students with disability in general in colleges, nobody wants to admit or say out loud because there's this halo effect. Mm-hmm. Everybody wants to say the morally right thing, mm-hmm. you know. So also, you know, taking into account with studies that we have done, I would ask faculty, well, what is it that you do? Then how did you present this? How did you adapt for the students? Again, it's not to trap faculty, but to help them become more aware. Right. In fact, this is society. This is the real world. When they go out in society to work, whether you have a degree or not, you are going to interact with people with disability. What a great opportunity it is in higher ed to start that. That is the real world to live in.
Are you advocating for students with special needs coming into college, or are you helping faculty learn to become an advocate for their students?
Well, it's both. You have to do both. Because number one, the student have to disclose if they have a disability, mm-hmm. right? That's a that's the part of the law. But the other thing is when they disclose and when the faculty gets the letter saying, I need to give this accommodation, faculty don't really know what to do other than, well, I'm going to give you extended time. Mm-hmm. You could give me 10 more hours. If I don't know, you know, if my teaching was horrible and I didn't make good adaptation, the student won't even get it, whether or not it's 10 hours or another 20
hours. Right, you can extend my time looking at a calculus book. It's not going to help translate that calculus into anything I understand.
Yeah. So we're talking about a lot of kids who have the opportunity to go to college. And in fact, I would say a lot of kids did very well in college because it gives them the opportunity to learn differently, more, you know, open and more flexible in the classroom than it is in K-12. So even though they may be identified with a disability, you will see a different side of students when faculty are willing to work with them. And I've seen that over and over and over again, whether students with autism come in with severe learning disability and they go, I finally get it now. I never understood math until I was in college algebra. They just teach it differently. And of course, these faculty are more qualified compared, you know, K-12.
It's very rewarding for the faculty.
Very, seeing a student making it through life and all this thing, you know, despite and in spite of their disability.
Yeah.
And I would like to call it a difficulty. At this point, it's not even a disability.
Yeah. Well, this sounds like really important, terrific work that you're doing. And I want to just say, you've busted some pencils.
This is Fully Leaded Education Talk. Busted Pencils.
1980, brand new book published called A People's History of the United States, written by an author, Howard Zinn. For those of you that have read the book, you know that this book changes everything. It turns history upside down. Howard Zinn specifically states that in this book, he's going to tell history from the point of view of those who lost. Sadly, we lost Howard in January of 2010. Howard was an activist, though, and people used to give him a hard time for being a historian who actually was an activist. Howard always took the position, though, how can you tell history if you can't tell it from somebody's point of view? You're always going to tell it from a point of view, so he chose it, and he took the idea of being an activist, being very proudly. And so here at Busted Pencils, where we have an education activist of the week, where we're talking about the good things that people are doing to bring back American public education, we're going to end every show with a moment of Zinn. Some specific little sentence or two that Howard Zinn said to remind us all about what we're doing. That is, we're going to hear something special from Howard Zinn in our moment of Zinn.
Our obligation is not to the government. Our obligation is to the principles that our country is supposed to stand for. The government is an artificial creation. This is what the Declaration of Independence says. The Declaration of Independence says governments are set up by the people to achieve certain ends, an equal right to life, liberty, the pursuit of happiness. When governments become destructive of those ends, that's the language of the Declaration of Independence, when governments become destructive of those ends, it is the right of the people to alter or abolish the government. Obedience to government is the sign of a totalitarian state. Disobedience to government is a democratic act when that government is not fulfilling its obligation to care for life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
Looking for Busted Pencils? Well, get out of your desk and make sure you go to facebook.com/Busted Pencils or check us out on Twitter @Busted Pencils, keep up with everything that's going on in the Busted Pencils world, make sure you follow us on the web at BustedPencils.com. Thanks for listening.